By definition, ambassadors are representatives of their sovereign and their nation. We have the privilege to discuss and represent our sovereign, Jesus Christ, and his kingdom for his glory. Join us as we seek him first. Welcome to Ambassador Talks.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Ambassador Talks. Ambassador Talks exists to glorify God by the pursuing of truth in God's word and applying it to the issues and challenges that are facing the church today. Ambassador Talks is brought to you by Ambassador Baptist Church of Hudson, North Carolina. For more information about the church, visit ambassadorbaptistchurch.org. I'm your host, Matt Baker, and on the mics today with me, as always, is Nathan Phillips on my left and our pastor, Robert Setzer, to my right. You're listening to episode 26, and today we cover a topic that you might not be hearing about it if you're listening in the region of the Southeast yet. This topic of euthanasia is being tossed around in the Northwest and Western United States, and in similar fashion, it's making its way into the Capitol for discussion. And just on Tuesday, Election Day, while the Republicans celebrated a win in the White House, liberal lawmakers in Colorado legalized assisted suicide for some patients with terminal illnesses, and it's now legal to do this in California, Montana, Oregon, Colorado, and as we mentioned, and now in Washington, D.C. They've defined this movement as the right to die movement rather than calling it assisted suicide for obvious reasons. Like abortion, it would have a much more difficult time passing the law if it were properly defined and described. This topic came to us from Nathan, who forwarded us a pretty disturbing article from the New York Times on this very subject. So Nathan, why don't you give us a quick synopsis of the article that you sent us and why it's relevant now yet again?
Yeah, man. Like you said, we run across an article from the New York Times, and it puts together some thoughts from a doctor in Durham. He is affiliated with Duke. And, Matt, it's a big issue that we just don't know about yet. It's coming this way. Like you said, it's in the West, and it was on the ballot last Tuesday for Colorado, and it got voted in basically 2-1. And it's something that really is going to touch all of our lives at some point, as we have parents and grandparents that are getting older by the day, it so happens, just like us.
Right.
And it's going to fall into our laps one day, too. So it's kind of this, I don't want to call it a gray area, but it's kind of this ethically ambiguous area that we probably haven't had that much time to talk about, really. And that's what this article's talking about to a great extent, is that lives are being prolonged now, and modern medicine is better than it was, so people are living longer. And he makes some false claims in the article that we'll get to here in a minute, but it's an important issue, and we have to respond as a church and say what we believe on it, and we have to be consistent. And just like we were talking earlier before the podcast started, if we're saying no to abortion, then it follows to me logically, guys, that you got to say no to this as well.
Absolutely.
And like I said, it's already in Washington, D.C. There's some right to die rights and laws in place there, as well as the West. And it's something that we need to be cognizant of, and something that we're going to run down and talk about the Hippocratic Oath, talk about a bunch of things here that the medical profession has believed and operated on for a long, long time.
So, Pastor, why does this become such an ethical gray area, even for Christians? And I guess, biblically speaking, where should our position be on this?
You know, Matt, we are holders to and believers in life. The Bible espouses the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. God is the giver of life, and it's only his right to take away life. It's incalculable, the amount of insight, of wisdom and understanding that comes through suffering. Not to say we glorify that, and I know it's an awful thing when a person is at the end of life, but God is the only one that has the right to take life. So how can we be firmly entrenched in the position of pro-life for the unborn, and then just kind of tip our hats and say, well, if you're old and you want to die, you can. Matter of fact, I think it, in the Netherlands, they actually, a proposal has come up to legalize assisted suicide for older people who were generally healthy. But they feel like, hey, I've lived a good life, and mm-hmm. I guess it's time to check out.
And we'll talk about the drift here in a little bit. And the drift that I'm talking about here is that it's not just for older people. We're going to see like some stuff that is just basically depressed people. And we'll talk about more of that in a minute. But it's not just limited to older people. It is going to as far as adolescents and things overseas.
That's
and,
what I was about to say. That's what I've been reading too. That it's going to be offered to adolescents with terminal illnesses as well as children with terminal illnesses, as if they're able to make that kind of decision on their own.
And we find it important here at this podcast, and we're not just going to be an issues podcast like we've been for the past couple of weeks. And although I do think that's extremely important, and I think the church needs to be educated, Pastor, on a lot of things that we just don't hear in the pulpit every Sunday, and rightfully so. We should preach the word and stick to that for the most part. But we need ministries, I believe, like this that educates our church on things happening around the nation and the world. But we can dive here a little bit into this article in the New York Times, and it's on assisted suicide going beyond do no harm. And that's the name of it. You can look it up on Google. It's by Hader Javed Warrick, I believe is the correct pronunciation of his name. He's a doctor at Duke. Let me just read his opening paragraph here. Out of nowhere, a patient I recently met in the clinic told me, "If my heart stops, doctor, just let me go." And he said, "Why?" I asked him. Without hesitating, he replied, "Because there are worse states than death." He goes on to say, advances in medical therapies, in addition to their immense benefits, have changed death to dying from an instantaneous event to a long, drawn-out process. Death is preceded by years of disability, countless procedures, and powerful medications. Only 1 in 5 patients is able to die at home. These days, many patients fear what it takes to live more than death itself. And that all sounds well and good when you're just reading through it, but you have to dig into this stuff. We have to, I mean, this is something the New York Times felt was, you know, important enough to make an article, so we, you know, should believe that it's important enough for us to respond to it. So there's a couple misnomers there that he says in his article there, and the first thing I see is that basically through all these medical therapies and all of the modern medicine that we have, that we've changed death to dying. Pastor, it's absolutely absurd to me that is he trying to make the statement here that before the 1900s, people just died instantaneously? That everyone just dropped dead instantly and that no one suffered? That's what I'm getting out of it. That's absurd to me. I can't believe, like, the New York Times, much less this doctor, is like, well, we've just went from, you know, somebody dropping dead to now we have a process of dying.
I wonder if he's ever heard of the bubonic plague.
Yeah, or anything for that matter.
Black Death.
Scarlet Fever. Anything that, like, was a prolonged death that was,
sure,
that was obviously a terrible tragedy. But that's the first thing I see, guys, is that we have this advance in modern medicine that, like we hinted at earlier, is that it's taken us to a morally gray area, and in some senses that, I mean, we can keep somebody on life support for a long time.
With that thought in mind, let me say that let's draw a distinction. We are drawing a distinction between, you know, DNRs, do not resuscitate,
yes,
orders,
correct,
where a patient who is sound of mind says to his physician or to his surgeon, in the event that I do not live through the surgery, if I die on the operating table, I do not want to be resuscitated. Now, that is different than the physician-assisted suicide.
But he's not making that distinction. He's just saying, his opening paragraph here is if my heart stops, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what this physician-assisted suicide is. It's give me some,
correct,
medicine
that is,
to
that's,
let me
And that's
me
the distinction
on.
That we are drawing, mm-hmm, right there. We believe that a person who is very ill, very sick, and of sound mind, and they say, now listen, I do not want to be kept alive. There's a place, I'm not a doctor, let me say that real quickly. There is certainly a place and a time, you know, for ventilators and thing and machinery of this nature, okay? And praise the Lord that we have that equipment. But there are situations where a person may say, I'm of such a physical condition and state that in the event I do pass naturally, do not resuscitate me artificially.
And that goes from withdrawal of treatment, that's on that side, and not giving administering treatment, to administering treatment to aid in the death.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, it's completely different from this guy coming in your house and giving you a lethal dose of morphine or whatever it is, and saying, you know, it's time for you to go. And the fear here is, and I've heard this in the Washington D.C. argument, is that the fear is that they're going to use this in a lot of ways to weed out some of the poorer population of D.C. And I heard I wish I could remember the article. I should have had it ready. But it was a black gentleman who was like, this is a death knell for black people in D.C., older black people in D.C., because they're not going to be able to afford the care, so they're just going to be like, well, you just need to kind of pass on, and you know, you're costing your families a lot, and that is exactly how it's phrased. You're costing your family a lot of money and a lot of heartache, and it would be better if you just, you know, kind of fade off the scene.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Washington, D.C., we're talking about the Western United States, but I can give you an example, not of this per se, but when we talk about the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, leans towards some of those provisions that you're talking about, Nathan, there, I read on Facebook where someone has a loved one in a local nursing home, and because of the Affordable Care Act and one of the conditions this person has, if it enters phase two of this condition, she will not be able to get treatment. Mm. She will be refused treatment, actually. Yeah. Because of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, I mean, we are going in a weird direction for our health care in this country, and hopefully some things can be turned around on that. But
well, Nathan, I know you remember Dr. Death, Dr. Yes. Kevorkian,
yeah,
probably 25 years ago when he had his little device, and he had his little cocktail of drugs, and that if you requested it, I think he would come and set up the IV. I think you had to actually
push the button
or whatever. But this was the guy back before it was even legal that was already helping people to take their lives.
6 minutes and caused death.
And he would be probably lauded nowadays.
No doubt.
I remember, you know, all the jokes and all of the, you know, stuff about Kevorkian, you know, years ago, and how it was such a big thing. And now he would have been a hero nowadays in 2016. I mean, so that's the first couple I think wrong assertions he makes in the article, and it just keeps going. But he goes on to make a statement about, yet even as assisted suicide has generated broader support, even though it's passed in the West and things. Quote, the group most vehemently opposed to it hasn't budged, doctors, unquote. So his own field is not accepting this as, you know, proper administration of medicine. And I mean, we can talk about the Hippocratic Oath if you want to, guys. That's important that a lot of people probably don't know. I didn't know every little nook and cranny of it till I read it today. It's not very long. I'm not gonna read all of it. But one of the important things that I saw in it, and the only line that you guys can see I highlighted in it, it says, above all, comma, I must not play at God.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that is something that the doctors sign. Mm-hmm. And that is, a lot of doctors believe that wholeheartedly, that they're not to play God. And I just have to think that's what we're doing here.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to also believe that some of this push and the acceptance of assisted suicide is because of a lack of understanding of the afterlife. I'm afraid people think, hey, you know, I'm going to die. I'm just going to nothingness. It's just the end of my existence. It's all over. And they don't understand, but it's not all over. We're a living soul. And each and every person in this universe, after the point of death, will be going to heaven or to hell. I mean, just to be blunt.
No, that's an excellent point. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but that's a great point. It probably points to a major problem that we have, just with death and dealing with our own death and not wanting to think about it and not wanting to think about, what's hereafter. So I think that's an excellent point.
Gentlemen, I forwarded this to you the other night, but I have in my hands a 22-page paper, research paper, I guess that's what you would call it, from Keith Essex, who is a professor at the Master's Seminary. Mm. And for those of you who are listening, if you would like to review this yourself, you can simply search Euthanasia Master's Seminary, and you will find a PDF of the article for you to read yourself. But on page 15 of the article, it begins giving a biblical application to why we oppose euthanasia. And if you'll allow me to read just a couple portions of this, the Bible does not specifically have a translation in Hebrew or Greek for the word suicide, making it impossible for the Bible to say directly, "You shall not commit suicide." However, the term suicide was introduced into the English language in 1651 by Walter Charlton in order to make available a more neutral and less judgmental term for acts of self-killing. However, it doesn't occur in the Bible. The condemnation of self-killing is usually inferred from the sixth commandment. If to shorten life of another through killing, except in war or for capital crimes, is wrong, to kill oneself is also wrong. Self-killing is also a form of killing, and killing is prohibited. But today, this understanding of suicide is biblically prohibited. Killing has come under intense attack. He quotes Arthur J. Droege, who had written a book about this, and said, "The idea that suicide is both a sin and a crime is a relatively late Christian invention, taking its origins from Augustine's polemics against the suicidal mania of the Donatist in the late 4th and early 5th centuries and acquiring the status of canon law in a series of three church councils in the 6th and 7th centuries. In other words, the act of taking one's own life, which had been accepted, admired, and even sought after as a means of attaining immediate salvation by Greeks and Romans, Jews and Christians throughout antiquity, now became the focus of intense Christian opposition." Mm. And that's where he begins to build his case biblically against euthanasia.
Yeah, I mean, suicide. That's good stuff. A lot to unpack, but good stuff.
It is a lot, yeah.
One more thing about this, or maybe a couple more things about this article, depending on where we get. But we talked about the slippery slope a while ago of the way that this legislation tends to go. And he makes a point here that is just off base, I believe. Mr. Warwick talks about in this article, and he says, while the way people die has changed, which I don't get that either, but the arguments, quote again, "the arguments made against assisted suicide have not. We are warned of a slippery slope, implying that legalization of assisted suicide would eventually lead to eugenic sterilization reminiscent of Nazi Germany." Who's made that argument? How are those two things connected? How are eugenic sterilization and Nazi Germany, how does that fit in to euthanasia? That blows my mind there. So I think that's a red herring or a false dilemma or whatever you want to put there logically. But to his point, quote again, "but no such drift has been observed in any of the countries where it has been legalized." But the drift I was talking about earlier has been observed, and that is depression, that they think that they are too depressed to go on and live. So that's a serious medical condition. Is that going to be treated with these drugs?
And Nathan, we find illustrations of that in the Bible. We look at Job and we look at Jeremiah, both of these men who faced extreme anxiety, and they even expressed maybe almost a wish to die, but never came anywhere near trying to do that themselves, and believing in the end that God did grant them healing emotionally.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, and that's another excellent point. But this is things that we have to consider, and so if it's okay to do it for terminally ill older patients, then is it okay for people that are terminally depressed? And what about adolescents that are terminally ill?
Where does older stop?
Well, I know.
Right.
Well, and that's the point that we were making earlier. And I think it's, I think it was Switzerland that had just euthanized, I believe, a 16-year-old because they were terminally ill.
We have a 17-year-old in Belgium.
In Belgium?
Mm-hmm.
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 Yeah. I mean, that is, I mean, that's concerning to me.
Mm-hmm.
That we are, I mean, I don't know what else to say on that, but.
And matter of fact, Colorado made it, offered it down to residents over 18.
Mm.
So.
So where does it stop? And how do we consider this in this country? Because it is coming to probably just about every state, I would say. I mean, I think that we see, as we saw with gay marriage, as we see with other trends in the government, that it flows west to here.
Right. And we know that the Bible clearly tells us that God has sovereign control over life and death. Pastor, you were talking about the changing of the culture earlier, and how, and Nathan, we were talking about it as well, how the church must be educated on these issues. And if I can go back to Professor Essex's article real fast, he says, he gives three guidelines for death. He says, first, death is inevitable. Each person should make preparations for death. And he said, with the present legal climate, it is imperative that each believer have an advanced medical directive. A durable power of attorney is better than a living will. And he says, secondly, death is an enemy. Therefore, when the hope of recovery through medical treatment remains a possibility, the believer should take advantage of every opportunity to forestall death so that he can continue to serve the Lord.
Yes.
Third, dying is a process. And he cites Hebrews 11:21-22 for that. Therefore, when it is reasonably certain that a patient's disease is incurable and terminal, measures designed to control physical pain, to provide food and water, to give regular hygienic care, and to ensure personal interaction and mental spiritual stimulation should be instituted. Letting die is not to be equated with passive euthanasia.
Hmm.
That's very, very heavy. And I think of people, institutes like hospice that does that for people right now here in our county. And it's very, very important that we are educated on these matters.
And those are very important services that, you know, a lot of our families and friends work for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not, you know, hinting at or anything like that they're doing. We're talking about, you know, a legal bill that's coming to a state near you, and something that is, you know, it's going to be a cause for concern, and something that all of us will have to consider is, doctors ultimately probably will ask us the question as, you know, we get in these situations. One more thought from this article from Warwick that I want to talk about. He mentions throughout the whole article on how death has changed, but he kind of sums it up with this last sentence here that's not the last of the article, but it's one of the last paragraphs here. That instead of seeking guidance from ancient edicts, we need to reevaluate just what patients face in modern times. And I'm sure some of that he's talking about the Hippocratic Oath, which is an ancient edict, but I'm sure he has the Bible in mind too.
Oh, but undoubtedly.
What else would be an ancient edict in that sense too? Because the edicts is plural in his sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So, and kind of traditionally, religions have, you know, been against suicide, you know, for a long time. And so he's like, you know, well, let's just throw out everything that the doctors have agreed on for thousands of years. Let's just throw out what the Bible has said for thousands of years, and let's go with our culture. And that's where we're at today, Pastor.
You know, man, the Bible says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Why are we scared of death? I think about two men that I had the privilege, and I say that literally, the privilege of being in their presence when they graduated, when they died. I think about Norman Austin,
mm-hmm.
Very advanced in years, mere 100 years old. And I remember being in the room that evening, and it's like just shortly before Norman passed, just like he looked over to one side of the room as if he was looking at something. I think he was. I think about the passing of Mylon Hayes' dad. I've never been in a situation quite like that before, with the singing around his bed. And, you know, there's something that has a very sobering effect upon one when they're in the presence of another loved one, especially a saint of God, who takes that last breath and passes on. And I don't think we should be scared of that. I don't think we should purposely try to avoid it. Nathan, you know,
yeah.
Something to think about.
It is, and I think it's just something for Christians in general to think about as we are faced with this. It all goes back to me, from the arguments that we've talked about with abortion and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If we're consistent and we can't take the image of God and put it to death like we do in abortion, then I don't believe we can pull that trigger with this either.
Right.
And I don't want to seem insensitive because I know in some stages of death it's painful.
Sure.
and it's a struggle, and you almost and seeing my grandmother struggle for basically 2 weeks probably on her deathbed, I'm just like, you want that person to pass on for you know, for the family's healing and for every and all of that. I'm not belittling any of that whatsoever, but I think it is very important for us to retain our beliefs and convictions, and to not be the ones to push that button when it comes to our choice. I think that you know, life and death is of God.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. What a timely discussion today, gentlemen. We here at Ambassador Talks we're dedicated to equipping you, the listener, equipping ourselves with the information and the knowledge from God's Word and from other sources as well, to prepare you to make a stand for truth and for Christ in the secular environment and the world we live in, which, as we've talked the last few weeks, we're not an issues podcast. These issues have come up organically, and they will continue to come up.
They're hitting us right in the face.
They really are.
I mean, that is...
And it's not because it's just election cycle. These things are going to happen. They're going to continue to be an issue.
We can't go to sleep on it. We've got to pay attention to the political arena, you know, as it's... Mm-hmm. Not just around November every 4 years.
Absolutely. And this is a great instance, Pastor, to show that state issues are just as important as national issues when it comes to voting. The informed voter is an empowered voter. So know the issues that your state is voting on. Very, very important. We want to know your thoughts on euthanasia. So send us your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or you can send us an old-fashioned email at ambassadortalks@gmail.com. We're working hard on being on the forefront of bringing these issues up as soon as they become public knowledge. Nathan, you actually sent me a picture of the iTunes podcast library after our last episode on Jen Hatmaker, and it showed only a handful of podcasts that were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So Ambassador Talk stays on top of the news affecting you and what affects the church. And this is all in an incorporated effort here to be outside the box, but inside the Word. So we hope you'll join us again next week on Ambassador Talks. Thanks for listening.